And this time, our next guest will be Frosty Wooldridge. We're going to be talking about the worldwide crisis of illegal immigration, what this all means to all of us, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Frosty Wooldridge possesses a very unique view of the world, cultures, and families that he obtained bicycling 100,000 miles around the globe in the past 25 years. He graduated from Michigan State University in 1970 and the Grand Valley State University in 1973. He has worked as a college guidance counselor, a teacher in math and science. He also has been a great lecturer at Cornell University and many other schools. He's our special guest this half hour on Coast to Coast. Frosty, welcome back. How are you?
Thank you, George. Just a pleasure to be with you once again and all the listeners out there. I don't mind telling you that all the people that were listening over there in Kuwait and wrote letters, and I was astounded. Well over 1,200 emails within 24 hours of talking to you last time, and it was an honor, and I answered every single one of them.
Good for you, and thank you for that. By the way, bicycling 100,000 miles, Lance Armstrong would be proud of you, wouldn't he?
Well, thank you. As a matter of fact, I saw Lance Armstrong this summer in Karlsruhe, Germany, because I rode my bicycle along with three other fellas from the highest city in Norway, which was Nordkap, all the way to Athens, Greece, about 3,500 miles, and it took 3 months and a week to do. And while in Germany, friends of mine took me to Karlsruhe, Germany, in southern Germany, and we saw Lance go by about 10 seconds worth, and there were 400,000 other bicyclists there watching the Tour de France, and it was a pleasure. And much of the time when we were traveling, little old ladies applauded us and the Italians applauded us, and we were on the tour to Europe.
They thought you were part of the winning races.
They certainly did. And, you know, they have such great passion over there in Europe. I mean, just passion for bicycling. So it was a great summer. I got to interview dozens of people from Norway, France, Holland, Denmark, Germany, Switzerland, Greece, and Italy, and also Austria on the crisis of immigration over there. So this is not just in the United States. This is a human dilemma facing all of us, and it is worldwide.
You know, and since the very horrible tragedies of Hurricane Katrina and now Hurricane Rita, I haven't heard much about what's going on in Iraq other than what I have to search, and I'm definitely not hearing anything about what the Minutemen have been doing, if anything anymore, down along the borders of Arizona and Texas. Are they still busy?
Yes, they are very much busy, and in fact, Jim Gilchrist, I just talked to him 3 days ago, he's running for Congress there in Southern California, and I think he's probably going to step up right along with Congressman Colorado Tom Cancredo, and more American citizens are starting to step forward at the precinct levels and certainly on both sides of the aisle and demanding that this president and certainly this Congress start addressing the number one issue that will be the defining moment for America in all the last 229 years, and that's the crisis of this country literally being infiltrated and undermined by a massive horde of illegal alien migrants who are not invested in our country, they are not helping our country, and in fact, they will be the reason for the downfall, much like the Vandals in Rome over 1,800 years ago.
I believe the 2008 presidential election, Frosty, will consist of some three major issues, Iraq, the economy, and immigration, and I think immigration may be one of the big ones.
Well, as a matter of fact, it wasn't the last one, George. If you remember, Bob Schieffer was on the moderator in front of both Bush and Kerry at the time, and he said the most emails he had gotten into his office were about illegal immigration, and in fact, both candidates literally blew it off within 60 seconds with their answers, but they are not going to be able to blow it off this time because the American public is very, very, very angry.
Do you would you support, Frosty, building almost like a wall of China around the United States. I mean, all around the Mexican border. I love our Canadian neighbors. We broadcast heavily there. I have dear friends there, some relatives there. But would you be in favor of some kind of technological wall where if somebody scaled it, touched it, alarms would go off, cameras would go off? I mean, is that a realistic way of securing this country?
As a matter of fact, an electronic wall, Glenn Spencer down there in Arizona, I've seen his operation. We could easily protect our borders from illegal aliens by putting troops on the borders every 400 meters with night scopes and so forth, and we would stop this thing. The Minutemen proved it. Jim Gilchrist and Chris Simcox proved it last April. I was down there. They stopped a normal flow of 4,000 illegal aliens per night in a 30-mile sector and cut it down to almost zero, and they reported well over 335 illegal aliens, and the rest of them, of course, could not and did not get across, and there was no incidences that caused any violence whatsoever. So yes, but the real key is that this president and this Congress must enforce the immigration laws on the books right now. We need to go after the employers of illegal aliens and put them in handcuffs and make them do hard time, and then we won't have to have illegal migration because they literally will deport themselves. It happened back in 1954 with Dwight D. Eisenhower. 1 million illegal aliens literally walked back across the borders because the jobs dried up. They were here illegally. They knew they'd be put into jail, and that solved it. And George Bush right now could solve the illegal alien migration crisis in this country within 90 days if he would simply do his job and do his sworn duty.
What's the real motivation for wanting all these illegals to come into the country? And I want to point out first, Frosty, I have no problems with legal immigration. I think the quota is too high. I'd like to see it reduced. But I have no problems with people wanting a better life coming into the United States. Quite honestly, if we're going to do it, we should do it right and pick the cream of the crop. I mean, the people who can help this country more than we can help them. But in terms of this particular situation, what's really going on? Why have we as a nation turned our back to the borders to allow these people to come in?
In my appreciations and all the columns that I write for newswithviews.com each week, twice weekly, it is my contention and my research that the corporations have become so strong that they literally have bought. There's about 25, I think between 20 and 25 lobbyists for every single senator and congressman in the entire Congress, and they are literally degrading the laws or buying off laws or making sure that laws don't get passed or enforced. And let's face it, George Bush is not a man of the people. He's a man with a multi-million dollar back pocketbook, never has had to do a day of work, doesn't know the price of a loaf of bread or a gallon of milk or a gallon of gas, and so he and the rest of Cheney, of course, makes millions with Halliburton.
Well, I think he knows the price of a gallon of gas now.
Oh, yeah. I think the U.S. public has got his attention, but the key is these corporations have no concern for the American middle class, and they are aloof, they are simply insulated, they're isolated, and they're far above the rest of us, and therefore they're outsourcing, they're insourcing, they're offshoring jobs right through the Congress. So your friendly senator, your friendly congressman, if you look in numbersusa.com, which is one of my favorite action committees there, numbersusa.com, I ask everyone to join that because what I'm working for is critical mass of American citizens to counter the growing critical mass of illegal aliens, now well over 20 million. And that is, check the report card for your own senator and your own congressman, and the fact is, they get F minuses and D minuses in the case of immigration, and that's what's really the big crisis here. It's literally corporations buying off our own elected representatives against us, against our laws, against any kind of a reasonable immigration policy, and that's what we're facing right now.
Now,
money,
of course,
and power.
I heard that the number was 10 million. You just said 20 million.
Yes.
Maybe there it's also somewhere in between.
Well, as a matter of fact, if you'll go back to September the 12th of 2004, Time magazine, and I actually have the copy right here, stated that we are literally importing into the United States 3 million illegal aliens per year now, and they estimated to be well over 20 million.
20 million.
And that's Time Magazine. And in my own research of the book that I wrote, Immigration's Unarmed Invasion, Deadly Consequences, Time Magazine, these are two Pulitzer Prize winning authors, Steele and Bartlett, and they corroborated everything I wrote in my book, and you just can't, you can't get away from that. That whole article is September the 12th of 2004, and the title of it is Who Left the Door Open? And it says it right here. And I'll quote you right here.
And while you're looking for that quote, of the 20 million then illegals, what percent do you think have jobs in the United States? What do you think?
Oh, they didn't say how many had jobs, but I would say out of the 20 million, you better believe there's somewhere between 7 and 8 or heaven only knows how many millions there are jobs taken, but they're in every corner, every sector of the United States.
Are they taking jobs that some Americans just don't want to do?
That's a falsehood.
You think so?
Absolutely. They are now here in Denver, Colorado. They have they're taking jobs of construction. They have paint crews. They've got the landscape crews. They've got electrical crews. They've got roofing crews. They're literally moving into every aspect. They're taking over custodial crews. They're taking over fast food. So they're no longer just picking lettuce, George. They are taking over American jobs, and they're taking them over for literally starvation wages, $2, $3, $4, $5, $6 an hour.
But which is big money to them, right?
Oh, big money to them, because they're only making a buck or two per day. But the Bears and Stearns report came out this last spring before I left for Europe, stating that the second largest underground economy in the world loses American taxpayers. The IRS does not collect $400 billion, that's per year now, because illegal aliens work off the books, because these employers are frauding the American taxpayer. And guess who makes up the difference for that $400 billion of uncollected IRS taxes?
Yes, sir. Here's, you know what? Another reason why we should go to some kind of use tax instead of this income tax.
Totally agree. I'm going to give you this quote right here in Time Magazine. Based on the Time investigation, that the number of illegal aliens flooding into the United States each year is 3 million, enough to fill 22,000 Boeing 737 airliners or 60 flights every day of the year, landing every place in the United States. It will be the largest wave since 2001 and roughly triple the number of immigrants who will come to the United States by legal means. That's right out of Time Magazine, George.
Now shock us, Frosty. What kind of benefits are these illegals getting from us in terms of incentives and tax breaks that we're paying for? What's out there?
350,000 mothers, pregnant women, come over across the borders illegally every year now, and those women drop their babies. It's an abuse of the 14th Amendment, and it costs us no less than $8,000 per delivery, and then it costs us $108 per cycle per year to the age of 18 to educate them, because that anchor baby and that mother go on welfare. They get free medical, they get free food, they get aid to bend to children, they get assisted housing. Literally, they become wards of the state, and you and I pay for it. That is just simply the anchor babies alone. The average illegal alien uses $2,700 a year more in welfare services than they pay in taxes, if they pay taxes at all, and that's according to huge study in the Center for Immigration Studies in Washington, D.C., Mark Corian.
Are they getting special breaks, for example, on mortgages and loans and things like that?
They're absolutely getting mortgages and breaks on loans. To the detriment of American citizens. And that is happening right now with assisted housing, and they're using, of course, my book. It's called
How does an illegal come in and apply for a mortgage? I mean, does he lie about his status?
That's exactly correct. He lies about his status. He has a false Social Security card. He has false identification. And there's two-tiered level of law enforcement today. Gomez, the guy that killed Don Young, the officer here in Denver last spring, had been caught three times without a driver's license and insurance, was let go all three times. You or I, if we were caught with a driver's without a driver's license and insurance the second time, we would be in shackles and into jail and have to put bail out. But instead, this man got away with it three times, and now he killed this officer, and he's down in Mexico. It's a two-tiered. In other words, it's third world momentum. In other words, your third world countries have so much corruption that everything has turned into a lawless society. That is what's happening here in the United States with the sanctuary laws in our big cities and smaller cities, and of course, a two-tiered level of law enforcement.
Sounds like a push for a one world government, or at least a one government North America. What do you think?
Well, it's also a push for affirmative lawlessness, you know, affirmative action lawlessness, because it gives those who will not adhere to the laws special dispensation to break the laws. And we, the law-abiding citizens of America, are paying a severe price. 29% of all of our state and federal prisons are filled with legal and illegal immigrants in our country who have done felony crimes. And we pay almost $2 billion per year. But think of those 600 or the 500 to 600,000 felony prisoners in those prisons across the country. What did they do to our children? Here in Boulder, Colorado, just a year ago, 8 illegal aliens raped 8 college girls, and they were working here in Boulder. They had a sanctuary policy law in the Boulder, and they simply got away. 7 of them ran back to Mexico and have not been caught yet. One of them did get caught, and now he's getting 3 square meals per day, 365 days a year at a cost of $62 a day. So we're still paying for that.
Yet not all the illegals are criminals. You'll grant that.
Not all. Well, as a matter of fact.
Let me rephrase that. Not okay. All illegals are what I would call violent criminals.
No, they're not. All illegal aliens in this country are federal criminals. They are absolutely criminals because
they're breaking the law.
They break the law. Now, I'll give you another consequence that I may not have talked about last time, George. In the last 3 years, 7,000 new cases of leprosy have now popped up on the eastern seaboard because of illegal aliens crossing our borders unscreened from India, from Brazil, and from the Caribbean. And they are now, it's for the first time ever in the history of the United States, leprosy is endemic.
Leprosy. I thought that was a disease during the biblical days.
That's right. It is. And it's only a disease in a very, very poor hygiene area with people who carry on very poor hygiene. But that's nothing. In the last 5 years, this country had tuberculosis, and I'm a former U.S. Army Medical Service Corps officer, Fort Benning, Georgia, Fort Riley, Kansas, Fort Sam Houston in Texas, and San Antonio there. And I learned about diseases a great deal. And 16,000 new cases of tuberculosis have entered this country in the last 5 years because illegal aliens do not get checked as they come through the border illegally and unscreened. And the average illegal alien will spread the disease of tuberculosis, which kills 2 million people worldwide in third world countries every year now, will spread that disease to between 10 and 50 American citizens. And in fact, last April the 24th, one illegal alien in Santa Barbara, and you can check it on the April 24th issue or April 25th issue, it says Anatomy of an Outbreak, one illegal alien spread his tuberculosis to 56 others in the Santa Barbara area. Chagas disease is coming in. 14 million people in South America suffer from this parasite. It kills 50,000 per year. There's no way to cure it. It's coming up through the borders now, and when it starts manifesting itself, again, it's third world momentum to diseases that we have to suffer because this president and this Congress are allowing this wholesale, massive horde of unchecked, unscreened individuals coming across our border.
Well, and the previous president allowed it too.
Clinton, right? And George Bush won, and Reagan did the same thing.
Absolutely. And I think one of the most bizarre aspects of all of this, Frosty, is several months ago, the illegals who entered Arizona were caught by some Minutemen who the illegals claim roughed them up a little bit too much. the illegals sued the Minutemen, and they won their farm in court. Can you believe that?
I know. I read all about that. And, of course, again, two-tiered justice, and it's absolutely inequity to the American public because the Constitution is not being served right now by this president nor this Congress.
All right, Frosty, thank you. Frosty's website, of course, is frostywooldridge.com. Don't worry about spelling it. Just go to coasttocoastam.com. It'll take you right there. Now, in a moment, Don McIlvaney joins us as we flip to page 4 right here in our special potpourri of guests tonight on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie. Well, you better check your bank account. Better find out how much money's in your wallet or in your purse. Because in a moment, our guest is Don McIlvaney, and he's going to tell us if that's going to grow or if it's going to disappear. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, maybe you're using a little bit of your mind control prayer, who knows, because Hurricane Rita has just made a sharper than expected turn to the right, and it might miss Houston and Galveston, which would have been on a direct hit. This is very weird. We'll watch that story. Donald McIlvaney is the editor of the McIlvaney Intelligence Advisor. That is a very excellent monthly geopolitical financial intelligence newsletter. With a background in undercover intelligence work, Don remains closely connected with the international intelligence community. He is sought out by leading high-level political, business, and military leaders throughout the world. His consultations range from military strategies to understanding geopolitical moves affecting global freedom and the international marketplace. And I had a chance to meet Don several months ago in Los Angeles, where I think you picked up the lunch, didn't you, Donald?
I think I did, actually.
Yeah.
It's your turn next time.
That's right. How have you been?
I've been very good. Yourself?
By the way, I am holding in my hand right now your latest McIlvaney Intelligence Advisor, and once again, you've done a very good job with this.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Don, everything that's been going on right now, all centers around chaos and in these hurricanes. But some of these disasters and these oil shortages, are they real or are they man-made?
No, George, they're real. And the oil shortages have been building since the 1970s. We have a real global supply-demand crunch in oil. Oil production and reserves begin to peak about 1970 in the United States. And then over the last 20 or 30 years, they begin to peak systematically in different parts around the world. So you've got a situation where there really are shortages beginning to develop on oil on the one hand, on the reserves, which are peaking, and on the other hand, you've got exploding demand, especially coming out of China. Mm-hmm. China is grabbing all the excess oil they can anywhere and everywhere in the world.
Why don't we get off this?
I'm sorry?
Why don't we get off our dependence on oil?
Well, you know, we had a chance with the oil embargo. We had a wake-up call back in the 1970s, and we ignored it. And so we now still import 59% of our oil, and a lot of it comes from places that are becoming more and more hostile all the time, especially the Middle East.
Sure.
So we're kind of stupid. We usually react to crises only up to our eyeballs and alligators, which is kind of what happened down in the Katrina thing. So even without Katrina or Rita, we have a tremendous supply-demand shortage of oil and gasoline that's building. We haven't built a new gas refinery in the United States since 1976. In one of my recent newsletters, I made a prediction, and I'll stick with it. You will see $80 to $100 a barrel oil. You will see between $4 and $6 a gallon gasoline over the next couple of years, and it may happen sooner than we think. And if people want to know where things are going, they need to go back and dust off the history of the 1970s, George. In the 1970s, we had an explosion in oil prices, inflation, interest rates, gold, silver, they were all moving up together. The economy was moving down. The stock market was moving down. Real estate was moving down. We've never had a major move in oil since the end of World War II that has not triggered a recession. So we're headed into an inflationary recession, and this is going to be global in nature. And so an awful lot of things are converging at one time. We've got these physical disasters, Rita and Katrina. We've got a war which is escalating literally out of control over in the Middle East, which is very much like the 70s again, when we had the Vietnam War going on, and the government printing money like there was no tomorrow, and inflation was picking up, and oil prices were going up, and so forth. So we're seeing a rerun of the 1970s. You've seen an explosion in commodity prices. They're up about 125% in the last year since about the time you and I talked. Oil is up about 60% since the last time you and I talked about a year ago. Gold and silver have now broken out in a very, very strong bull move. We're looking at some hard times. Nobody wants to think about these things. Everybody wants to think good times are going to roll forever. But I'm here to say I think we're looking at a global inflationary recession, and I think part of that is going to be a bursting of the real estate bubble that we've got that's been building over the last 5 years.
When do we see that bubble really pop?
Well, you're seeing excess inventories build up in California now. You're seeing building stocks are dropping very sharply. You're seeing Fannie Mae, Ginnie Mae stocks dropping very sharply. Some people think that the bubble may be about to burst, you know, right now. I don't know. I think it's got to burst. All bubbles, whether it was the internet bubble in the latter part of the 1990s, whether it was the real estate bubble in the late 80s and early 90s, which finally burst, and we saw real estate drop by about 50% down in Texas, about the same in Southern California. It moved to the Northeast, the Southeast, the Northwest. All bubbles eventually break. You've got this massive speculation in real estate now, where about a third of the homes that are being bought now are second and third homes. People are buying them for speculation. People are buying homes, as you well know, look at Southern California, with virtually nothing down, 5% down, interest-only loans. They're using ARMs, adjusted-rate mortgages, at a time when interest rates are going up.
I look at the same house, Don, because I've got the luxury of going back to Los Angeles and St. Louis, and I spend about 75% of my time in L.A., 25% of my time in St. Louis. A $200,000 house in St. Louis, $200,000 house, which will give you 4 bedrooms, 2.5 baths. That same $200,000 house would go for $1.2 million to $1.5 million in Los Angeles. The same thing.
It's insane. It's insane. There was one of the actors, I forget his name, but he bought a house out in Malibu about 7 or 8 years ago for about $3 million. It's 2,500 square feet, 2 bedrooms and 3 baths. I think he paid $2.5 million or $3 million for it. He sold it a couple of months ago for $10 million. Now, this is insane. And, of course, there are several things. Rising interest rates can puncture the bubble, or you can simply get to the point where people can no longer afford to buy, and the buying just begins to taper off, and then the market begins to fall of its own weight.
All right, we haven't seen that yet, have we? The people stopping to buy.
I think we're getting closer to that. I think Greenspan and the Fed are even worried, and that's why they went ahead, even in spite of Katrina, and they raised interest rates this past week, and they'll raise them again in another month or so. I think they know that there's a giant real estate bubble that could burst. You've got real estate mortgage debt has gone from $4 trillion to $8 trillion in the last several years. And this has all been fed by the Federal Reserve, which has created about $5 trillion out of thin air in about the last 6 or 7 years. This thing will come down like it did in the 1980s. I used to speak for the International Association of Financial Planners in the 80s, and I warned these guys. They were loading up with limited partnerships, real estate limited partnerships.
Yeah.
And I told them, I said, this is going to end badly. You've got to watch out. They didn't believe real estate could ever come down. The flood, the levees can't break in New Orleans, and the bubble won't burst. We all know bad things don't happen. At least that's the way most Americans think. Well, when the real estate market broke, it basically wiped out 75% of the financial planners in the United States. Most of those real estate partnerships went down. I knew dozens and dozens of developers, speculators, and so forth that went under, and there were tens of thousands in Texas, Southern California. Can you imagine what would happen to California real estate now if it dropped 50%? Like it did in the latter part of the 80s and the early 90s, if it dropped 50% with people leveraged up to their eyeballs, this thing is going to be a big ugly. it's going to look more like the Japanese real estate bust. And when the Japanese real estate market fell apart in 89, 90, and 91, it dropped $12 trillion.
Well, does this become a buyer's market for some people eventually?
Oh, absolutely. For people who are not heavily in debt, for people who see what's coming and who are liquid and are probably, for the most part, out of the market and just sitting there with their cash waiting and waiting, there will be incredible opportunities. But there's got to be a lot of pain, and a lot of people are going to go down. I will predict right now that millions of people will go bankrupt in the next 2 or 3 or 4 years. Because of their real estate holdings. The other side of that, oh yeah, you're going to be able to buy real estate. And I think after the stock market finally does its thing on the downside, which is coming, I think you'll be able to buy stocks very, very cheap. People forget that during the Great Depression, 10,000 people became millionaires because they saw the handwriting on the wall. They saw what was coming. They got out of debt. They got liquid. They got out of real estate. They got out of stocks. They got out of the banks. 10 million people or 10,000 people became millionaires when $1 million really meant something, mm-hmm. because they were mavericks and they were able to buy the world at 5 and 10 and 15 cents on the dollar. That opportunity is coming again.
Now, is it going to be gradual, Don? Will it be gradual or will it be sudden? I have a friend. He does investing. He's been buying everything in sight. I, as a friend, told him, "Look, you better slow down." I've talked to people like Don McIlvaney and some others. They're not too bullish on what's going to happen. He keeps buying. He could get crushed.
I think he probably will get crushed. I hope I'm wrong. I think he will get crushed, and I think when this comes, it's going to come much quicker than most people think. I don't know when it's going to come. It might be 1, 2, 3 years from now, and it might be 1 or 2 or 3 months from now.
But when it comes, will it be boom or will it be gradual?
I think it's going to be very rapid because there is so much debt out in the system. There's trillions and trillions of dollars in debt. We have debt on housing alone, mortgage debt on housing in the last 5 years has gone from $4 trillion to $8 trillion. It's doubled. You have this tremendous overextension of debt everywhere you look, especially in our real estate market. And when it starts to come unraveled, I believe it will come unraveled much faster than people think. And I think for people to get out, it's kind of like you had to get out before the internet stocks begin to collapse. If you waited until the collapse started, you waited too long, and most people didn't get out, and people lost 75-85% of what they had in the tech stocks and the internet stocks. I think real estate is very, very illiquid. I'm not saying don't own any real estate. I have a fully paid home in the mountains in Colorado. But I'm not going to sell it, but I think people shouldn't have more than 25% of their net worth in real estate. I think they should have the debt down to as low or zero as possible. And I think the rest of they need to just keep the rest of their assets liquid.
Well, now, I was always told finance as much as you can. What's wrong with that?
Well, that's great.
You know, write it off, and, you know, as long as you can support the mortgage, you're okay.
George, I met a man in 1986. His name was Clint Murchison. He owned the Dallas Cowboys. In 1980, he was worth $2.1 billion. In 1986, when I met him, he was broke. He had lost $2.1 billion. He was highly leveraged in Texas real estate. The oil price fell. An unexpected economic shock came, and that economic shock could be a hurricane on the Gulf Coast. It could be a suitcase nuke going off in Los Angeles, okay. New York, or Chicago.
All right.
I mean,
could be
something
anything,
unexpected
right.
happened. The market fell out of bed in Texas, and this guy was heavily leveraged in real estate, and he lost everything. John Connolly, the Secretary of the Treasury.
Okay, but why did he lose it? Because he couldn't support the mortgage payments, or
yeah.
because maybe he had borrowed against it, and he was in trouble that way?
Heavy leverage. Look, it's like buying a commodities contract. When you have 5 or 10% down, if the market goes up 5 or 10%, you just doubled your money, and you feel pretty smart. If the market goes down 5 or 10%, you just got totally wiped out.
If it goes down 15 or 20%,
They're looking for more.
That's right. You get that phone call from your broker.
When people are heavily leveraged, and you've got more millions of people heavily leveraged in real estate than ever before. If nothing else bursts the bubble, the rising interest rates will ultimately burst the bubble. So we're telling people, get liquid, get out of debt as much as you possibly can, just the opposite of what conventional wisdom says. We're telling people, yes, of course you want to have exposure to natural resources, to commodities, and I'm not saying commodities, leverage commodities, but there's some good commodities funds out there. We're telling people, of course you want to have precious metals. Precious metals are in a strong bull market. You want to have some energy stocks. That probably would be one of the exceptions. Energy stocks and defense stocks are about, and gold mining shares are about the only exceptions that we would say in the stock market. Other than that, the stock market's overpriced, and at some point, the stock market's going to come down with a thud. There are some conservative ways you can position yourself. I'm sorry, I'm going really fast because we don't have a lot of time.
Oh, we don't have time. We're jamming everything into a full show into 30 minutes.
Exactly. But there's a lot of defensive action you can take. But Americans won't anticipate. How many people in New Orleans were prepared? Were prepared for that thing. They should, they knew for years that those levees could break. How many people in New Orleans actually had flood insurance? The implications from New Orleans and maybe now Rita are going to be very, very large. Our government, I make this prediction right now. Before it's over, George Bush will spend close to $500 billion. Bush and the government on the cleanup and the rebuilding and so forth of down on the Gulf Coast.
Well, you can't do that with current income. You got to raise taxes, and they promised they wouldn't do that.
They won't. They'll simply print the money. They will print the money, and that's going to put massive downward pressure on the U.S. dollar.
Oh, you mean they're just going to merely create it out of thin air?
Hey, how are we financing the Iraq war? We're financing that's how we've got $500 billion deficits. We're financing the Iraq war like all other wars with the printing press. We're going to finance the rebuilding of Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, and now Texas. We're going to finance it through the printing presses. Now, foreign holders of U.S. dollars, they know that. They understand that. And the Chinese are beginning to peel out of their dollar. That's why they just went to a basket of currencies that's not just the dollar. Right now in the Middle East, there's strong talk of denominating oil transactions in euros instead of dollars.
Bill Gates is leaving the dollar.
Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, the smart money, George Soros, the smart money of the world knows that the dollar is headed for a major crisis, that the country is headed for a major crisis, and so they're getting out of dollars. Okay, it's just that the handwriting is on the wall. We are going.
You're depressing me. Tell me something enlightening, for crying out loud.
We are moving towards an inflationary depression. There is going to be a bust in the real estate bubble. The stock market is going to come down. Precious metals, commodities, and natural resources. So-called tangible assets will continue to go up for the next 5 to 10 years, as they have for the last couple. Financial assets, which are stocks and bonds and real estate, because of the incredible leverage in mortgages, are going to go down. And that's the trend for the next 5 or 10 years. And people need to understand this. And by the way, I have a couple of newsletters I've done on this subject, the economic implications of the real estate bubble, the oil explosion, et cetera, et cetera. I would love to encourage your people, if we could, to call me or go on our website and get a couple of copies of these newsletters. I think people need to understand what's going on, and they also need to understand there are defensive things you can do to protect yourself. I know that 98% of the people won't do it, but I'd like to think a couple of percent out there that are thinking and understand the times would want to get them. So I've got a couple of newsletters here I would love to offer if people would like to get them.
All right, now tell me this is all a bad dream, and we're going to wake up and everything's going to be okay.
You know, that's what the people down in New Orleans thought before Katrina hit, and then when it missed them, they said, boy, we dodged the bullet, didn't we? And then the levees begin to break. So I hope that it is just a bad dream. I don't think it is. I'm telling you, we're looking at $100 a barrel oil. We are looking at $4 to $6 a gallon gasoline, and you just factor that into what's going to happen in the economy. And we're looking at the real estate bubble bursting as the economy weakens through all of this. Anyway, I've got this article on the U.S. real estate bubble. Is it about to burst? And also the economic implications of the Katrina disaster and the explosion in oil prices. If people would like to get a copy of that, they could call me at 1-800. They're free. Okay, lots of information. You may gag, but hopefully it'll help you to understand the times of what to do.
1-800-what?
1-800-525-9556. That's 1-800-525-9556.
9556, or you can also I think you can get them through McElvaney.com, McElvaney.com. There's really a lot of hardcore information in these reports, and I wish we had longer to talk because there's so much I would like to say, but there's a lot of information I think could be useful to you if these things concern you. And if
longer,
they don't
longer
concern
to
you,
talk.
I just say God help you.
Any longer, Don, I would jump off a bridge.
I'm sorry. Don't do that yet. Don't do it yet. There are positive things that you can do. There are positive things you can do, but you have a program, I know, that is primarily for mavericks. The average person is not going to groove on the kind of stuff you have on your program. Well, what I write in my newsletter is also for mavericks. It's for people who are thinking people, who are not just buying the government party line, whether it's on inflation or whatever. And so I would love for your people to get these and take a look and see what they think. I think it'll help them.
Very good. Thanks, Don. Appreciate the offer that you're giving the Coast to Coast listeners. We'll be back next hour in just a moment with Alex Jones and then Richard C. Hoagland on Coast to Coast AM.